So now we can get to the heart of things, how to meditate. And if you get good instructions, it's the easiest thing in the world to do. First of all, when we meditate, it's all about calming everything down, how to relax, to take off the tension of life. So first of all, we start with relaxing our body. And it's amazing just how much tightness and tension, how much stress lives in the body. Many psychologists these days, and I teach them, so actually they say this because I tell them it. Many of your of your stresses, traumas even, sometimes get stuck in your body. So your body's quite tense. It's one of the reasons why people can't go to sleep at night. Simply because all that tightness in the body prevents you relaxing so that you can just let the body go and just have a nice sleep at night. So we learn how to relax the body first of all. How do you relax the body? It's amazing how many people don't know. And even though they live 30, 40, 50 years, they forgot the art of relaxation because we're so busy these days. So we have to be aware of our body first of all to find out how it is. And then when we're aware of our body, closing our eyes, feeling the sensations in our body, just feeling how it's like, then we can learn how to relax it. Now there is something which I call the relaxation dial inside your mind. Just like on the dashboard of a car, you have all these different dials which tells you whether you're running out of gas, whether you're going too fast, whether the engine is too hot, all these little dials there which you can actually see. And they move left to right, and that tells you whether you need to slow down or speed up, whether you need to fill up with gas. It shows you where you are and what you need to do. And that's with this relaxation meter inside your mind. So you can feel how relaxed you are. And if you need to relax deeper, you find out what's necessary, what actually you do, so that your relaxation goes deeper and deeper and deeper. This is where the idea of mindfulness comes in. You're aware of your body and you're aware of the degree of relaxation, and you find out, sometimes just trial and error, how to relax it more and more, deeper and deeper and deeper. Until you can relax your body very deeply. Now, that's the general relaxation of the body, but then you find parts of your body which are a bit tight, tense. And this is amazing how you can use this for your physical health to overcome a lot of sicknesses even before they really become known to the doctors. You can feel a part of your body is a little bit unbalanced. You can feel that because you've got your mindfulness of your body. You feel there's something wrong there. And just by, again, trial and error, you can see how that relaxation, that comfort, that ease meter, whatever you wish to call it, how it gets more comfortable, more easy. You feel more relaxed, more comfortable. And just a little bit by trial and error, by practice, you can learn how to relax anything in your body. I like telling people the story just a few years ago when I had food poisoning, great sort of pain inside the guts. I didn't need to go and see a doctor because you know what it's like these days. By the time they come or they send the ambulance, you're dead. So instead of doing things like that, maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but it takes a long while to get there, especially if you're out in serpentine. So I was just in my cave where I live in monastery down at Serpentine, and instead of calling the doctor, just was aware of this incredible pain, aware of it, and I can see just how it relaxes or how it gets worse, and just do that one sort of little way of looking at that pain to relax it and relax it and relax it and relax it and relax it. Because I've been doing this for a long time. I'm obviously very skilled at this. So it just took me 20 minutes to relax the food poisoning agony completely away. It wasn't there anymore. It was brilliant. Now, I've done these things before, but that's the latest one. And it really surprises you just how easy it is to do when you know how to relax away even food poisoning. And it was gone, never came back again. Now you can imagine what other aches and pains you can actually be aware of. That mindfulness shows you where it's getting worse, where it's getting better. And then you relax and relax and relax until your body gets to a stage of what I call delightful relaxation. The body feels really good. Maybe you wake up on a Sunday morning, you haven't got to go to work, you haven't got to go to the toilet, you're nice and cozy in your bed, you don't want to get up. Because you feel delightful in that beautiful relaxed state of body. Or like what many people do, they spend thousands of dollars going overseas to resorts so they can get that same degree of relaxation on some beach in Bali. And I'm telling you, you don't need to go to a beach in Bali. Just come to the Armadale Meditation Group on a Tuesday evening and you can get even deeper relaxation, which is one of the reasons why we call this group Club Med, yes. Club Med, Armadale, Tuesday afternoon. Club Meditation, that is. But it's the same. You can really relax and it's a delightful feeling. And those of you who can relax the body that deeply and feel that delightful feeling, it's actually quite important if you want to do a lot of meditation more, because meditation, relaxing, peace, is actually joyful. It's not tough, it's not painful, it's not stressful, it's the opposite. It feels great to meditate deeply. So you start with the body and your body feels really nice and relaxed. And also for those of you coming here for health reasons. Now, when I was in Bangkok last week, I gave talks, one at Samiti Wake Hospital and the other one at Bumrung Rat, which is now the 9th best hospital in the world. You know, it's amazing that they've got that sort of accolade now. And teaching them just how to avoid such things as cancers and stuff. You can feel it in your body before it gets you. There's something wrong, there's some imbalance. Feel it there, and just you can relax and relax and relax until the body self heals. It's incredible how powerful this is for those people who want to have a healthy body. And my body is incredibly healthy, believe it or not. It's been a lot. All the other monks get sicknesses, I never do. They say they got colds and they got constipation, they got diarrhea. Been a long time since I heard anything like that. So, it actually works. You feel your body, it feels really good, relaxed, open, healthy. That's where you start from. And then we have to learn how to, more importantly, relax our mind. Your poor old brain is overworked. You've been so stressed out. It's got all these wounds and injuries from the past, which haven't healed up properly yet. There's all this tension about the worry of the future. It doesn't know how to relax. So we learn how to look at the past and the future, just like aches and pains in the body. How can we just relax them away until the past doesn't really bother us anymore? And we look at the future, whatever is going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen, so don't even worry about it. One of my favorite philosophies is, if you don't plan for the future, things will go wrong. If you do plan for the future, they go wrong anyway. Either way, it goes wrong. So you might as well not plan and enjoy yourself before things go wrong. So that's my motto in life. There's a lot of wisdom to that. So, you can just, especially when you're meditating, don't plan for goodness sake. This is not work time, this is relaxation time. So, no planning, no sort of worrying about the past, this is relaxing time. Like I tell people that when I was doing exams, final examinations at university when I was a long time ago, it was really stressful. You know, it's just a great shame that I worked so hard for that degree. If only someone had told me I was going to become a monk, I wouldn't have needed to worry so much. All that hard work, and what did it get me? Nothing. So anyway, in the middle of exams, I kept thinking about the exam I'd just done half an hour ago. It's absolutely crazy. It's in, the paper's in, I can't change it, right or wrong, it's finished now. But that was what I was afraid of. Now, your exams in your life so far, right or wrong, who knows, it's done, it's finished, you can't change it now, so forget it for goodness sake. And those of you who think you can learn from the mistakes of the past, ha ha ha, you don't. If you keep worrying about the past, you keep repeating it. You learn from the present moment, from right now. This is where people learn. This is where you get wise. Not from dredging over the past. And, okay, two chicken farmers? Yeah, there's a couple of people here who haven't heard this before. This is important about the past. There are two chicken farmers. The first chicken farmer got up early in the morning to collect the produce from the night before, took his basket into the chicken shed and filled the basket. You know what's coming next. I'm ahead of myself. And he filled the basket full of chicken shit. The whole basket collected all the shit from the night before, put it in the basket and brought it into the house with him. That's really a dumb chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two. He went into the shed with the basket and put the eggs in the basket. He left the shit in the shed where it belongs. He brought the eggs into the house where he could make an omelette for his family's breakfast and sell the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That's a smart chicken farmer. Is that what you would like to do? But what's the meaning of that story? When you think of your past, when you collect the produce of your past, what do you put in your basket of memory and bring home with you?
People matter.
Shit collectors, that's what you are. Why is it we always remember the bad stuff? Leave that in the past to rot. What happened to you, someone cheated you, someone gave you wrong advice, they argued with you, they told you off, they accused you of things you didn't know. You know, that is fecal matter. This is armour now, I can't say that. Shit. And so, leave that in the past. Collect all the happy memories. If you're going to collect any memories at all. So don't worry what your wife said this morning or 10 years ago. For goodness sake. That should have rotted away a long time ago. If it's bad stuff. The beautiful stuff she said. Bring that into the present moment. The happy times you've had. Bring that into the present moment. So the past, why we keep worrying about the rotten things which happen, it's absolutely crazy, human beings. But anyway, so let go of the past, relax it. And don't worry about the future. Your future is being made right now. This is the only time you can do anything for your future. So put your attention in the present moment and relax. Now when you start watching the mind in the present moment, you can see just how tense it is, how tired it is, how worried it is, how angry it is, whatever it is. See if you can be mindful of that meter on the dashboard of your mind and learn how to relax the mind. Just a general feeling of ease and comfort and relaxation, because you will find when the mind starts to get comfortable and relaxed, it doesn't tend to think so much. And the biggest problem with people meditating is thinking all over the place. And you know, they try and stop thinking by another thought. I must stop thinking. That's another thought. Oh, there it goes again. That's a third thought. That's a fourth. And it keeps going on like that because you don't know how just to relax the mind. Don't try and stop the thoughts. Relax the mind. You can feel the mind getting more and more comfortable, more and more at ease, and you'll also notice it becomes more still and more peaceful. See that peace indicator inside, and see what you need to do to increase the level of peace inside. That's what we should really be mindful of. Mindful of the breath is great, but more importantly, be mindful of how peaceful things are. And when that gets very, very peaceful and very still, then you can go on to meditation objects like the breathing, which I will introduce. But if you go into the breath too quickly, you're thinking and the past, worried about the future, then you can't really do it. And it becomes stressful again. Meditation is not another thing you have to do. Another thing on your list of things to get out of the way today. I've got to do my meditation. And that just becomes another chore, another reason for more stress in your life. In fact, meditation is the art of doing nothing. The art of relaxation. You don't actually do meditation. Meditation happens when you stop doing things. Relax. And give your poor brain a break. And if you're coming here to improve yourselves, you've come to the wrong place. As far as I'm concerned, you are good enough already. Stop trying to improve yourself. Just be kind to yourself and embrace yourself as you are. That is how to be peaceful. And as long as you embrace yourself as you are, be kind to yourself, open the door of your heart to yourself as you totally are, then you're peaceful. And you get the amazing insight, I don't need to be improved. I'm good enough. All these people who have been telling me I'm not good enough, they're the ones which were wrong. They were stupid. They were unenlightened. Do you trust me? Do you think I'm a wise monk? You do? Well, believe me, if you're going to have faith in anything, have faith when I tell you, you are all good enough. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Really? Well, then just relax and enjoy yourself. You don't have to improve. Nothing to attain, nothing to get, nothing to change, nothing to get rid of. I'm good enough as it is. And all those people for your whole life who say you weren't good enough. You weren't clever enough, you weren't pretty enough, you weren't good enough at football, you weren't good enough at school, you weren't good enough at life. You know, they were all wrong. You are good enough. So says the expert, Ajahn Brahm. So, if you can believe that, you don't need to come here anymore. It's a good way of getting rid of people, so you can get more. Okay, so there we go. That's how to meditate. Really easy. I will leave you. Any questions? No, thank you very much. So let's get started. We always allow questions. So we're going to get started in a moment. So I'm going to go and sit down below where I belong. Not too many lights out, because otherwise I can't see clock. Yeah. But otherwise, I don't know how long.
Just switch things
seconds, you can start to become aware of your body. When you're seeing things, your brain is taken up by visual stuff. It hasn't got much space to feel the body, so you can feel much more with your eyes closed. And once you have your eyes closed and you're starting to become sensitive to your body, now is the time to adjust your posture. You can straighten your back, or you can lean back, you can loosen it. You find out what is the best position for you. Use the mindfulness, the awareness of comfort. Find out which way you need to move. And your legs on the floor, or cross-legged if you're sitting on the ground, be aware of the position of your legs to know which is the most comfortable position for them. And be very careful to find that comfortable position. If you pass by and ignore this state of meditation, your body will disturb you later on. And where your hands are, you can put them on your knees, you can put them in your lap, wherever you find comfort. So you can experiment. And if ever during the meditation you need to cough or sneeze or scratch, please do so. Don't don't wait until the end. Now start to feel the body as a whole. See how comfortable it is. Now always there's some part of the body which is irritated, painful, or just a little bit tight and stressed. Which part of the body stands out, or your body stands out as needing some relaxation, some TLC? With me, a bridge of my nose, still got a little bit of congestion, hay fever, whatever, allergies. So I put all my awareness to that area which is most irritating, which hasn't really relaxed yet. And for you it may be your intestines, your colon. You may have had irritable bowel syndrome. You may have some injury in your back, headache. Whatever it is, feel it. By being mindful, I mean being fully mindful. As if you're pouring water into a glass right to the very brim. Be as aware as possible. Put all of that feeling into your mind until it's right to the brim. Full mindfulness of those feelings. And then you can notice that those sensations in the body, they do change. If you're afraid, if you try and control, they tense up and get worse. If you are kind, let it be. You find it relaxes. And you soon learn by that little bit of trial and error how to relax just one part of your body. I'm just relaxing my sinuses. Fully aware, just being kind, and noticing the irritation begin to lessen, the pain begin to ease, the tightness begin to loosen. You're relaxing just one part of your body, the one which is the most irritating or painful. With training, it becomes really easy to relax even my sinuses. Those with breast cancer, you can relax even tumours away. You start to feel your body open up. The parts which were tight become looser. Knots of pain become untied. You are mindful, aware, what I call the relaxation meter, the dial in your mind that shows you how relaxed your body is. with your mindfulness there. Just put your mind down there. Focus on that. Fill your mind out with that. And then you find you can relax. Relax and relax. Because some of those tensions, some of those knots inside your body, they correspond to traumas in the mind. By relaxing the body, you go a long way to relaxing your mental world, your emotional world. The body is much easier to work with. You start to notice the delight of relaxation. The same cozy feelings, as I said, when you wake up on a Sunday morning, sleeping in, with no duties to be done. If you can develop the perception of that pleasure, you'll be able to relax so deeply, you too will enjoy very good health. Relaxing to the max. You find you're not doing very much, you're just letting things be. Because when you get out of the way, the body relaxes. Once you think that you've relaxed as much as you can do all the meditation like this if you need to, but I'm just going a little bit deeper for you. Once the body's really relaxed, then we turn to our emotional world, the world of our mind, of our inner world, of thoughts, past, future, feelings. How relaxed is your mind now? Or is it still bothered by things of the past or worried about events which may or may not happen in the future? Please remember the past can't be changed. The exam papers are in. Good or bad, it's happened. You can't learn from it. If you want to remember anything, just remember the fun stuff, the eggs, not the shit. And as for the future, this moment right now, this is where your future will be made. If you want to be happy, healthy, peaceful, build those qualities right now. Look after this present moment, and then you're looking after the future at the same time. And in particular, you deserve to rest, so you have enough energy and power to face the future. You need to rest right now. So how do you feel in the mind right now? How relaxed are you? How tense are you? Especially those meditating for the first time. Don't worry about the fact you don't know what's going on. I'm leading you, and I've got a very good international reputation. You're in the safest of hands. Just relax and open up. And know how you feel. Keep your awareness, your mindfulness, noticing the relaxation meter inside of yourself. What you need to do to get more relaxed, more at ease, more peaceful inside. still be aware of thoughts, but don't keep the thoughts in the center. Just the main focus, the main attention, just on how peaceful you're becoming. Like you're settling somebody down. Child has been excited. You're comforting them, but you are that child. You're comforting yourself. Ease in your mind. Letting it settle down and come to a state of relaxation. Soothing it. Your mind becomes, the more pleasurable it feels. Peace of mind is delightful. You find as you relax the mind, the thoughts get less and less powerful. Your thoughts are like waves on the surface of a lake. If the lake is still, the lake is at peace, then there are hardly any thoughts. So don't look at the thoughts, look at underneath them, your mind. Relax that. Soothe it, comfort it. Feel the peace. Be aware of the peace. Be mindful of that peace. Growing and developing. If you want to start watching your breathing, just ask yourself, how am I breathing in or am I breathing out? How do you know? By focusing on the feeling of the breath, you can relax yourself even more. And if the thinking is still a bit rough, you can use thoughts. By thinking as you breathe in peace. As you breathe out, let go. Breathe in peace. Breathe out, let go. As you say that word, breathe in peace, feel it. Imagine peace. Imagine it coming into your body and mind. When you say to yourself, let go. Imagine sicknesses, problems, stress, all leaving your body and mind through your nostrils. Breathing in peace. Beautiful peace. Without all tightness, pain, whatever to let go. Breathing in peace. Without let go. to learn how not to control, have confidence, have kindness, which is the opposite of control. So let it go. And the breath tells us whether we're letting go or whether we're controlling. period of time. How relaxed are you? Physically? Emotionally? How much peace of mind have you got? How delightful is it? Just to be with nothing to fix up. No problem in this moment. Just being. And now give a ring the gong 3 times as usual. Please wait for the third sound from the gong to vanish before opening your eyes to end the meditation. Best thing I've learned in my life. Oh, yes. Okay. Now it is our custom to have a look in the box. There's a question. My goodness, it must be my lucky day. If I had money, I'd buy a lottery ticket. But I don't have money. Here we go. My husband. He's very negative and does not support me at all. He criticizes all I do, so we're now at the stage where he hardly speaks to each other. Otherwise, he bites my head off. I try so hard and I'm at a loss where to go and what to do next. Thank you. How to deal with negative people, especially if you have to live with them in the same house. It's not that hard to do. So you've got someone who's very, very negative. Is he always negative? Is he always a negative person? And the answer is no, there is no such thing as a negative person. There is a person who often behaves negatively. But they're much more than that. Here we go. This is an old psychology exercise Very good. How are you doing? Well, you've softened it. Very good. You must have put a sock in the loudspeaker or something.
No, I promise I didn't. Not yet.
Not yet. It's a good idea though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this was a little experiment which was done in a school in the UK about 40 years ago now, because I remember hearing this or reading about it when I was doing psychology. There was, you know, the old schools used to have streams, and there were two classes of the same year. And it's 1 year, it wasn't such an important, maybe year 9s, year 8s, around that time. They decided to do an experiment with these children in the two classes in the same year. They gave them the exam at the end of the school year, where they would usually grade them for the following year. They'd usually put the top half in class A and the bottom half in class B. But this year, they decided to mess around a little bit. So they gave them the exam, but they did not publish the results. All they did was take the child who came top and put them in the same class as the child who came 4th and 5th, 8th and 9th, 12th and 13th, 16th and 17th, and they put the children who became 6th and came 2nd and 3rd in the same class as the ones who came 6th and 7th, 10th and 11th, 14th and 15th. In other words, they split the 260 children as equally as they possibly could. And there's only the principal and two psychologists were the only ones who were in on what was going on. And they tried to give them equally competent teachers for the next year. Equally well-resourced classrooms. They made everything as equal as possible, except for one thing. They called one Class A and the other one Class B. That's all. And they were totally equal. But of course the kids didn't know that, and the parents didn't know that. And so what happened? Some of the kids who went home and said, I'm in Class B this year, Dad. No more privileges for you. You have to work harder. I don't want my kid to be in Class B. And some kids got in Class A. Well, you've been doing nothing all year, but well done, kid. Here, have some extra sort of privileges. Well done. Because the parents, they thought Class A was the top half. And even the teachers thought that Class A was the top half. Which has meant they expected more of them. And the kids themselves, you know, some say, oh, I'm Class B. You know, I'm not so good as the guys and girls in Class A. And for 12 months, they had that sort of attitude. And when they gave the exam after 12 months for the next year, the children in Class A did so much better than those in Class B. In fact, it was just what you would expect if they had been the top half chosen from the year before. Literally, the Class A kids became Class A, and the Class B kids became Class B. And there was no difference the year before. And that was a chilling experiment, which just shows if you call a person a Class B person, they become a Class B person. If you call a person stupid, they become stupid. If you look at your husband as negative, he becomes negative. Is there such a thing as a negative person? No, there's people who sometimes have negative attitudes and negative minds. But if you look at them as they're negative, the game is finished. They will act negative to you. So, knowing that experiment in psychology, and I think you all can get this, because sometimes people have called you stupid, and you become stupid as a result. Mm. And, you know, you're negative. You got this disease, that disease, you've got OCD. Some, please excuse me, idiot psychologist says you've got OCD. And then you become OCD. I'm saying this with a lot of care, but because this is where the problem lies. There's no such thing as someone with OCD. Obsessive compulsive disorder. There's people who sometimes exhibit those qualities, but that's not who they are. To show you how this really comes about. Two children in the supermarket. I wrote this story in the first book I wrote. Two children with their mums, supermarket checkout. The same parallel aisles, the same time. One child drops the jar of honey. Smashed on the floor. Makes a big mess. Exactly the same time, another kid drops a carton of milk, which also smashes on the floor. The mum of the kid who dropped the honey. You stupid boy. The mum of the kid who dropped the milk. That was a stupid thing you did, son. Totally different attitude and totally different results. When you say that, you stupid kid, it means you're totally stupid. There's no redeeming qualities in you at all. And imagine what that's like. You probably had that happen to you. You stupid girl. I'm not a stupid girl. You did a stupid thing. You focus on the fault. And that's not all of you. Come on, there's more to you than that. You're not a stupid person because you dropped the milk. It's a stupid thing you did. So what you're doing is you're focusing on the fact there's much more to a person than their little mistakes. There's huge amounts of them, other than their negativity. So the job of whoever wrote this is you have to really look to see other parts of your husband which are negative. to look at that, see that, and realize he's not a negative person. He's a person who's been lots of negativity. A lot of time it's what you see in a person is what they show you back. And if you've been looking at that for such a long time, this is what he's showing you most of the time. There's another part to that person. So you've got to look at the other part, somehow or other. And to help you do that, there's the old trick of getting a piece of paper and drawing a vertical line down the middle of that piece of paper and putting your husband's name at the top. Darling. Go on, go for it. I know it's very hard for you to say that, but put it up there. And on the left-hand side of the line, write all the terrible negative things he does. All the examples of negativity. Left-hand side. That is so easy to do. In fact, one half of the piece of paper is never enough. It's right in the margins, between the lines, fitting every little last little piece in to get it all in. Great, go for it. And on the right-hand side, all his positive qualities. Can't do that. There aren't any. Yes, there are. Force yourself. I remember doing this with the guy. It's actually about himself. He thought he was a rotten person. And doing it with him. Say, come on, you must think about something good about yourself. See, there isn't anything good about myself. I'm a hopeless person. I'm terrible. I'm a failure. I'm awful. I'm a waste of time. Well, have you got a cat? I asked him. He said, yeah, I've got a cat. Did you feed the cat this morning? Yeah, I fed the cat. Put that down. Fed the cat. I had to force him to realize feeding the cat was a lovely thing to do, a compassionate kind of thing to do. Okay, what else have you done? And, you know, once he got that breakthrough, just one kindness, which he saw in himself, the next one came much easier. And the next one, the next one, the next one. Sitting next to him, he filled in the whole right-hand side as well. So there you go. That's who you are. Yeah, you got this part of you. You acknowledge that, but you got this other part of you as well. Focus on that. So you have to sometimes force yourself to see the positive good qualities in your husband. Write that down on the right hand side. Once you've filled that in, okay, you can use big letters, okay, so you can fill it up quite quickly. But you got something there, okay. And then, scissors, cut it up the middle. The left hand side with all the negative things, you know about that enough, you've been focusing on that for years, that goes in the trash can. The right hand side with all his positive qualities, which you force yourself to notice, laminate it. Put it in your purse, photocopy it, post it by your bedside, anything, so you can keep on looking at that. Those qualities are in him. Come in, start focusing on those qualities. You can see them, they're actually there. And once you start seeing them in that person, they start showing you those qualities. And they're not so negative anymore. What you see in another person is what they show you back. And I learned this when I used to go and teach in prisons. In prisons there were paedophiles. And I must say that I think many of you may probably agree with me, that's just one crime which is just the hardest to accept. You know, when sort of grown men and grown women, they abuse these beautiful little kids. And it's gross and it's the yuckiest thing. But when you meet a paedophile in jail, what do you do? When you meet a murderer in jail, when you meet sort of this rapist in jail, and they're there, what do you do? I see they're not a rapist. They aren't a paedophile. They're this human being who's done these incredibly awful, cruel, terrible things. But they're much more than that. So because of my training as a monk, I look at the other part of them. You all know the two bad brick in the wall story. I'm not going to say that again. It's in my first book. Don't look at the force, you look in the other part. And this incredible thing happens. When I see the other part of the paedophile, and you see the other part of the murderer, or the other part of the rapist, they see that as well. They're no longer a Class B person. they're more than that. They're huge. Got incredible potential. When you see not just their faults. Apparently one of, as long I don't really go to prison much these days. I've done my time. That's only visiting. But the monks of Bodhinyar, they go down the road to Carnet once every fortnight or so. And one of them was saying that one of the guys over there, a murderer, towards the end of his sentence, I think murdered two or three people, I think. And he heard this story. He'd actually read the book, The Opening Door of Your Heart. And he was going around prison all the time, just saying, it was only two bad bricks. It's incredible, it's only two bad bricks. Wow, it's only two bad bricks. He's actually got it. He's not a murderer. He's a human being who's done these terrible things. He's out of jail. Still inside the prison, but he's out of jail emotionally. He's seen another side of himself, which for years he could not see. And if he thought he was a murderer, if they'd have released him, he'd have murdered again, because that's who he thinks he is. Class B kids, if you called a Class B kid for one whole year, you actually become a Class B kid. You do. If you say you're a murderer, if you hear that for 20, 30 years, you become a murderer. That's who you are. You become what people tell you you are, and you believe in that. And so when I could see these other prisoners, and see, you're not a paedophile. The human being has done that terrible, terrible, terrible thing. I can never excuse what you've done, but that's not who you are. You're more than that. And they see that too. And that's their healing begins. And it's incredible what happens. Okay, I told you I was the most humble monk. I say, if you are humble, let people know. What's the point of being humble if you can't flaunt it? No, I don't mind saying my success stories. Okay, I've stuffed up many times, made mistakes, but one of the greatest praises I've ever got, and I remember this, there's sometimes people say something to you, you've done something, and you feel so happy about that. It makes your whole life worthwhile. And that was a call I got from one of the prison officers. It was in the old Canning Vale jail, I think they call it, or whatever it is now, I forget, they changed all the names since I went there. And this prison officer said, I want to speak to Ajahn Brahm. Speaking, I said, can you come back and teach in my jail? I said, no, I can't, too busy going overseas, doing all this other stuff. He said, no, I want you back. I said, I'll send another monk. He said, no, we want you. And the obvious answer was, why me? And that's when he gave me this beautiful praise. He said, and I take this seriously, he said, I've been a prison officer in this jail about 30 years. I'm coming to the end of my career. Retiring next year, he said. He said, I've noticed something unique. Every prisoner who came to your classes, every one of them, never ever returned to jail when they were released. They never rescinded, or recidivism, whatever it's called. They, once out, they'd reformed, totally. He said, that was unique, I'd never seen that before. He said, I don't know what you've done, but we want you to come back again. And that just gave me so much happiness and joy. You've actually done something. Not just for these guys in jail, never went to the women's jail, but for all the people they could have hurt and harmed. Mm-hmm. You saved that. You've done a huge amount. And I often thought, why? What have I done? And I think that was what I did. Because I saw something more in these prisoners than the reason why they'd be put in jail. Then they saw that themselves, and they changed. Your husband, if you can see something other than his negativity, if you can see that, then he might be able to see that as well. And he realized he's not a Class B husband. He's not negative. There's more to him than that. And to show you how powerful this is, this whole idea, I said pretty much like that in a lecture I gave in the Institute of Mental Health. And I get to do some really good gigs. The latest gig I've accepted is I'm giving the keynote at the 2015 World Computer Conference. I know nothing about computers, but I'm doing the keynote. That's in Seoul in October. Fly there business class, nice hotel, just teach your wild church. Oh yeah, it's really hard work being a monk. You see, this is where you should, this is your career. If you're not married yet, or you want a nice career, become a monk. You get to do all these nice gigs all over the world. Really good. Armadale's nice. You know, you're my friends, mate. But anyway, so I was doing this gig in the Institute of Mental Health. It was the 40th, 50th, 60th year or something anniversary. So they asked me to go and give a keynote. And I told pretty much the same story about those prisoners. And just how, you know, just by seeing the other part of them, when I saw the different part of them, they saw that too. They recognised they weren't criminals. They were people who'd done crimes. And that was the key to getting them rehabilitated. And having said that story, this guy came up to me. This is a big mental institute in Singapore, the equivalent of Greylands, but only one place for everybody in Singapore. And also they get a lot of people from China as well go there. Like, they call it a hub. No, Singapore. If you've ever been to Singapore, hub is the key word. A hub for this, a hub for that. So it was supposed to be a mental health hub. And this professor came up to me afterwards and said, "I'm a Catholic, but I want you to come and bless my ward." I said, "You're a Christian, you want a Buddhist to bless your ward, what's up?" And he said, "Because I like just what you said." And I asked him and said, "Well, you know, what is your ward, what is your department?" And he was a professor of schizophrenia in Singapore, the big cheese, the boss. That was his field, professor. And I said, "How do you treat schizophrenia in Singapore?" And he said, "Exactly the same way you just described. I do not treat schizophrenia in the schizophrenia ward in Singapore Institute of Mental Health. I treat the other part of the patient." And I was so impressed that I just put my hands up, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Beautiful.
And you couldn't help but ask the next question, even though you knew the answer before you asked the question. What are the results? Far, far better than conventional treatment. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. People with schizophrenia, they're not schizophrenics, okay? And if you just see the schizophrenia, if that's all you see, they'll keep on repeating that and repeating that, and that's all you see, that's who they have become. Class B kids, just because they've been told they were Class B. That's why I said OCD is no such thing as OCD people. There's people who have episodes of OCD. But they're not OCD kids, okay? Please never tell them that. They're people, kids, who happen to have these episodes of OCD. Mm-hmm. Same with schizophrenia, same with negativity. And that's with other people. And it works. There's no such thing as a stupid person. I had this kid, I used to teach math in school. And this, you know, before I taught the classes, I think it was about 13, 14 year olds, the teacher said, "Oh, you know, be careful of that kid over there, he's hopeless. He came bottom the year before." Okay, you know, being a monk, you have to be a bit of a rebel, do things a different way. So, I said, "Well, just because he came bottom doesn't mean he's bad at maths. Or is he bad at maths? Is it a case that some kids just can't do maths?" And so I thought, let's do experiment. So my experiment for that whole year, you know, and I did this deliberately. I said, "I'm going to spend extra time with that one boy." It's a mixed school, boys and girls. "I'm going to spend extra time with him and see if I can just encourage him and make him believe he can do math." So I spent extra time. Every time during the lesson, I'd make sure I go to his desk, "You understand that?" And just give him encouragement. "Yeah, that's it, well done." And at the end of the class even, any questions there? You know, I'd actually make sure I focus on him. You can't focus on every kid in the 30-kid class. It was unfair, I agree. I admit that. But I encouraged him. He came top that year. What I understood inside through intuition was true. There is no such thing as a kid who can't do maths. Give them encouragement, give them some extra little bit of help, and they can become top. There's no such thing as a negative person. Encourage them. If you know how to do it, you can make them into the most positive person in the whole world. Incredible, but you can do that. Now, let's take it to the last thing you? Are you negative towards yourself? You look at yourself and I said, the beginning, I'm hopeless, I'm terrible, I'll never achieve anything in this life. I've got cancer, I've got this disease. Have you got cancer? Or is that just a small part of you which has cancer? How about focusing on all that part of the body which hasn't got cancer? Getting radical.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's an interesting thing to do. Otherwise, you think, I am the cancer person. And if someone says you're a Class B kid, you become Class B. You die. What about the other part of you which hasn't got cancer? I am a failure in life. What do you mean you're a failure in life? You fail, but that doesn't make you a failure. What about all the other things you've achieved? Now you can understand how when we brand someone as negative, if you brand someone, all your faults, what faults have you got? I tell terrible jokes, that's my fault. And it gives me the segue into telling my terrible jokes of tonight. Here it comes, tonight's terrible joke. Otherwise, you know, it won't be Ajahn Brahm coming to Ramadan.
Yeah,
so, there was a couple of guys in a restaurant, just, you know, celebrating something or other. You know, young guys, Australian guys. And there was this beautiful girl on the table by herself. And, you know, she ate something and obviously went down the wrong hole or something. She started to choke. And the guy stopped. They really wanted to help her, but before they could help her, she managed to cough up, you know, the piece, you know, of whatever it was, got stuck down her throat. At the same time, she had actually a false eye, and the eye went flying over the wrist. Because you never know, you know, girls, no, things happen. And one of these guys, you know, he was played on a local cricket team, and just automatically, he put his hand out and got it. And yeah, how's that? he went over, just gave her eye back, and you know, she was really, really embarrassed about it. You know, and just put it back in and just thanked him. So thank you so much, and said, come and you can eat with me. And so, you know, she shared the table with him and paid for a nice dinner for him. And they started talking, one thing led to another, they really hit it off. And so, you know, she took him back to her house and had a wonderful night together. And in the morning he said, are you like that to every man? He said, no, you happened to catch my eye. You must have seen that coming. So you see, that's my fault, but I don't always tell bad jokes. There's another part to me. I'm not a Class B joke teller, okay? Sometimes I do sell some funny ones. Rarely, but sometimes. So that's the important thing. There's such thing as a negative person. So this is a real problem. This is not a joke, obviously, because you have to live with this guy. So try that. Get a piece of paper. Lie down in the middle. Force yourself. So do the bad stuff first of all, negative. Force yourself to the positive side. Force yourself to start to see something in the guy which is positive. You find it's incredible how powerful that works. Prisoners, they don't become murderers anymore. They become human beings. They actually serve. They have to make amends for what they've done, but they serve. They do something good. And it's a beautiful thing to see that transformation in people. And you yourself, whatever faults you have, see the other part of you, the beautiful part. As I said earlier, all more than good enough. I've never ever met an evil person. I've seen people who've done evil things. See the other part of them, and you change them. It's beautiful to see that. So that's how to deal with that. Very good, there we go. That's the talk for tonight, and I do apologise profusely for that stupid joke, but I could not resist it. You have to tell me to go to a counsellor so I can get out of the habit of doing bad jokes. Okay. Any other comments or questions about what I just said? No? Okay. Thank you for the entertainment.